The Boyfriend-Girlfriend Relationship, the sixth talk in a series entitled Understanding and Living with the Dynamics of Sex, was presented by Nancy Scott on October 31st, 2007, at McKinsey Study Center's Wednesday night class. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2007. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
I'm going to talk tonight about the boyfriend-girlfriend relationship is the title of this talk. I don't know if that's exactly what I'm going to talk about, but I think I'll get to it anyway. And then I'm going to have my supporting crew here add things and ask questions too and enjoy a conversation. I noticed the last couple weeks when we interact with the whole group, we kind of all end up talking, and I was thinking maybe we'd try to do it where you maybe direct your question to a particular person or two, and that way there's maybe more opportunity for more questions rather than having us all four answer all the questions. So we could still do that. We're happy to do that, but we can mix it up a little bit too. Okay. Okay, so tonight's talk, I am going to be talking about an alternative model for the road to marriage, if you will. We've talked a lot about the biblical theory of sexuality and how our sexuality works, how marriage works, and what a biblical view of marriage and the relationship with sexuality is. And what I'd like to do is invite you to consider a different way of thinking about heading toward marriage than what our cultural kind of normal way is. And to say it first and foremost, the goal of marriage, the goal of being single, the goal of life, as I'm conceiving of this tonight, is to be loving. And so I'm going to keep that goal kind of in the forefront as we talk about answering the question. So the question comes up is, what is a loving way to proceed toward marriage? And so I'm going to talk about some alternative ideas and then propose, one for myself. So introductory things, the particulars of courtship and marriage, it strikes me, are not really specified by the biblical authors, but there are principles that are identifiable, and we've talked a lot about those in previous weeks. This is not intended as a how-to. It's not intended to be a formula of any kind. It's not really about finding a formula because it's just too complex. It's too individual. It's too nuanced to have a formula. And it's just not clean and neat because life is not clean and neat. So I'm not trying to make a formula for it. What is the done thing is typically very much culturally derived. So, for example, during biblical times, polygamy was the done thing. It was culturally supported. It worked. It was okay. This is what I mean by the biblical authors don't really specify a lot of the details. Now, I have pretty good reasons for saying that I don't think polygamy is a good model. But what I'm illustrating is that it can be culturally supported and we think it's okay as long as it... as our focus is on this goal of loving, then it isn't necessarily impossible to do it well, to do it in a good way. I want to use the same example to illustrate that our culture's dating model could similarly be very much accepted because it's culturally embedded for us, but it may not be the best way to proceed toward marriage. So if we can kind of step outside of our cultural thoughts and just the assumptions that we have about how we head toward being married, we might be able to consider another approach. So I'm going to talk for a minute first about what dating is in our culture. there's a lot of different definitions for date and for dating. And Jack talked earlier in our time about a lot of different definitions for love. I think it's similar. You know, the word date can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It can mean simply to arrange a meeting time. Can be that simple. It can mean to go out for coffee with a group of people. It can mean to go out for coffee with one person in a non-romantic way, and there's nothing going on. It can also mean to go out for coffee with a friend that there's attraction with and that there's maybe hope and intention for marriage with. Or it can go all the way to the end of the spectrum where it means going out for a romantic evening, wining and dining as a couple with some for dessert after the wine. Yes. And yeah, all my definitions had coffee. Huh? That's also culturally embedded, by the way. Okay. So it can also mean going out for a romantic evening. First dates can be infused with all kinds of potential and meaning and premature dreams and fantasies, even though I really don't even know this person yet. But just the very nature of it being called a date puts all kinds of pressure and intention on the meeting, or can. And so in the first date, I'm thinking, can I marry this person? And what I'm suggesting is that might be a really odd time to be asking that question because I don't even know this person. So often in our culture, dating is a sort of pre-marriage stage, a sort of commitment before deciding if moving toward marriage is really warranted. It's usually exclusive and or it must decide to be exclusive within a pretty short time. So if I actually date someone for more than a few times, then there's an implied exclusivity that's going to grow and kind of emerge. And that seems to be kind of how our culture does it. So, but there's lots of different ways to do it. Some of the drawbacks that I see with this model, one that I just mentioned is that it's not really the best way to get to know someone without all kinds of stuff in, you know, packed in there, all kinds of longing and fantasy and dreams and thoughts about what might be. And too often, I would say that too often it becomes more of a destination than a passing through stage. So if it were a passing through stage on the way to marriage, that would be one thing. But too often it's more of a destination. I need to be dating someone. I'm not even really thinking about whether or not I'm going to marry them because marriage isn't really on the table yet in my life. But I really ought to be at least seeing someone, exploring. And my contention is that it's not really a secure enough commitment for true intimacy to emerge. And so this pre-marriage kind of state that develops doesn't really work well for evaluating whether marriage is a next step. Two things tend to happen. One is that insecurity prevails, and so there's it's difficult to build trust in the wake of insecurity. The other is that a false sense of security prevails. So I might have in my mind, or one of the partners might have in mind, we are proceeding toward marriage, but we never have really said that, and that may or may not be the case with the other party. So it's a very undefined and yet very, there's a lot of assumption going on. It can also kind of turn into marriage light. In other words, getting a lot of the benefits of the friendship of marriage without a lot of the cost or a lot of the commitment. And the reason that that's not a good thing is because intimacy and commitment are so intimately woven together that apart from that kind of a commitment, it really isn't even appropriate that I trust in a way that is going to be just temporary. So that's another drawback. I would say that exclusivity is often a condition of dating, but this is too, like I was saying earlier, it's too often kind of an instant commitment. It's an instant decision made because I've gone out with this person a couple times. We're exclusive without a lot of decision making. So too often it can become a pre-marriage by default in a way that it's an implied commitment, and it's not really decided on. And part of that, I think, is communicated by the natural language. When Jack talked about the natural language of our sexuality, there's also a natural language of just time spent together communicating a deepening intimacy, a deepening commitment. There's a natural language to that. And there's also, I mean, and then particularly if a physical relationship becomes part of it, then that natural language is going to be even stronger, that I'm saying I'm committed even if I haven't decided to be committed. So this premature decision is also often made on not a really good footing. It's made typically on the basis of attraction or interest in possibility rather than an actual knowledge of another's person, character, interests, the real things that make them who they are, and the things that in a marriage I am going to be deciding to study for the rest of my life in a good way. Okay. So I think it also promotes a myth that this kind of serial monogamy that leads to marriage, it assumes that there's a right person out there and that I have to sort through a lot of wrong ones before I find the right one. And that's something that I would really like for us to question, whether or not that's the case. Another downside of this model is that often what happens is that when enough information is gathered, it's like we're already in it, then we gather the information, and then I find out who this person is or they find out who I am, and it is like, oh, well, wait a minute. I don't think this is going to work. And so too often the result is breaking up, and this can be devastating because we're not intended to start and stop this kind of an intimate relationship. It's really meant to go forward into marriage. So, and it also is just perceived and is often a very deep rejection. So it's very difficult to go through a series of breakups on the way toward marriage. And it can, I think, also affect how much I'm able to trust that the marriage is going to be stable for me, that it really is worth risking now, because we just naturally get more kind of develop a fight-flight reaction of, I don't know if this is safe, because it hasn't been safe before. So, okay, so that's kind of the dating model and some of my problems with it. There's also a model out these days, more of a courtship model. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that model, but there's various forms out there. There's a book called I Kissed Dating Goodbye, and that really kind of took everybody by storm for a while. And there's various forms of courtship that are popular these days, in Christian circles in particular. I think that in some ways that's a better model. For a couple reasons. For one thing, it does take marriage more seriously as the end result of being interested in another person or in a person of the opposite sex. And it recognizes the problem of the implied commitment that happens in dating and recognizes that that's an issue. But I think there are a lot of drawbacks to this model, too. And one of them is that I think it can encourage a decision to marry without enough contextual information about the person. So in other words, it kind of almost becomes more of an arranged marriage. And while I think that that's an okay model if your culture supports that, I think we do have a lot of choice and a lot of freedom in our culture, and marriage is not something that we do anymore out of necessity. Women can make good money, and you know, there's a lot of social pressure that's off of getting married now. And so I think we have a lot of latitude for choosing preference and for deciding who we want to marry. I think that's a good thing. I think that's an okay thing. It's not a bad thing. So I think that the courtship model can lean a little bit too much toward sort of an arranged marriage model. Can also encourage a form of friendship that might be somewhat artificial, just in this, because it's got all these, I'm not real familiar with it. I read the book, but it was a long time ago. But it puts all these various structures around how you interact with someone, and it's very defined and regulated, and it's chaperoned and all that kind of stuff. And I think that that's not really a natural way to get to know someone, and so that seems kind of rough to me. It can also be exclusive if there's an intention toward courtship. It can be a stated intention, and then that becomes exclusive, and yet it's also before a real commitment is there. It's like a pre-commitment commitment, and it can be a similar drawback that I'm in before I really know if I'm in or not, if you know what I mean. So it kind of becomes a different form for dating, but it's essentially pretty similar. So that would be part of my evaluation of that model. So the model that I would like to propose that's different than these two is basically a friendship model. And so in the friendship model, I want to describe what I mean by that a little bit and what friendship looks like between men and women. Next week we're going to talk more about relationships with the opposite sex, and so we'll develop it even more next week. But to start with, friendship, I think, is really a wonderful basis on which to build a marriage. Friendship is a really solid foundation, for one thing, for marriage. It's built, friendships are built on the same stuff that we talked a few weeks ago about building marriage on, like mutual respect, common interests, common pursuits, goals, and it's what will last beyond eros. When we've talked about the feelings of romantic love, it's really friendship that lasts. And so friendship is kind of a way of being normal with one another, and actually being married, there's more about it that's just being normal than there is about being fantastically, gloriously in love. There are those times, but mostly it's normal. And so if you can find someone that you're comfortable with and that you have a friendship with, that you like the same things, that you have the same goals, that seems to me like a much better basis on which to build a marriage. And then how do I move toward marriage if I have a friend who I'm interested in? Well, one of the ideas in this friendship model is that I want to work pretty hard with not feeding that eros. So I'm going to work to kind of contain that and work with self-control so that that I'm not feeding that Twitterpation. So that if I can kind of keep from getting all Twitterpated in this friendship, then I have a better shot at just really getting to know someone more clearly without the stuff going on, you know, the Twitter patient. I like that word. So here's a couple of things. So becoming friends without intention or agenda of pursuing a romantic relationship is a really good way to head toward marriage. Here's a couple of a few different features of this kind of friendship. And keeping it friends is key in this model. So it's not exclusive. It's not a possessive friendship. It's an open friendship. I'm friends with a lot of people as I'm learning about different people and who they are and what they like and what I'm like, and we get to know each other. Drawn toward each other in ways other than eros, so it's not just about a romantic draw, but it's more about just being normal and enjoying the same things and finding yourself doing the same things because that's where your paths cross. It's more just regular friendship. So again, it's an opportunity to be normal together, and normal is what you are mostly in marriage. Better context for observation of character criteria for marriage. It's not clouded. Trick or treat. Could somebody bring the cookies? Bring the cookies.
There's candy right
there. Oh, good. I invited my goddaughter to come, but I think she's already in bed. So friendship turns out to be what I think is a better context for observation of the character things that I really want to be looking for in someone that I decide to join my life with. And not feeding the eros, not feeding that Twitterpation, can really help build self-control, which I think is really, truly a virtue that is not very recognized in our culture. Self-control is a very old-fashioned virtue, but it's a really good one. And so kind of like we talked about either last week or the week before about how when you get married, it doesn't mean you don't ever have a crush on somebody again, but you decide what you do with that. And so you really can, as opposed to our culture that kind of has this myth that once you're in love with someone, that's just it. You have no choice. You just have to go with it. There's a lot of choices that can be made, and I think that's true before marriage also. When we get all those feelings going, we have a certain set of decisions to make and even a way of knowing something about ourselves so that those feelings show up and I know that helps me know something about me, not necessarily something about the other person. It helps me know what I want, what I long for, what I hope for. So this is not friendship as a cover for prematurely committed exclusive relationships. It's not friendship where two people hang out exclusively all the time and say we're just friends because we don't make out. It's not that. It's actual friendship that you'd pretty much be like with other friends. And it's also not a don't ever talk about it sort of model. I think that it would be okay to talk about whether or not you're working with a crush or whether you're working with Twitterpation if the motivation for that conversation is to be loving. Now, that's a big if, and we'll talk more about that next week. We'll talk about it some tonight, too. But if it's kind to give that information, then I think that that's okay to do. If it's about relieving my tension or about making me feel less uncomfortable, then it's probably not such a good thing to do. And that's often what can drive those conversations. So I think those conversations need to be entered in cautiously. But it's definitely not a model that says don't ever talk about it and then find out 2 years later that there was no interest coming back. And I think you can talk about it in a respectful, good way, and then move on to being friends. I mean, to still be friends, to really work with toning down the Twitterpation and not feeding it still. So, okay. So for this kind of friendship, again, the goal is to be loving. The goal is not necessarily to get what I want or need, as so much of the romantic feelings take us in this direction of, this is promising me this thing that I want and I need, and it's a good thing to want and need. And I just feel like I've got to have it, and it's promising it, and it's so great, as opposed to this goal that is to be loving. So to decide, what does it look like to respect this individual as a person and to know that they have thoughts and feelings and a personhood, and they are not there simply to be the object of my affection and to give me what I need. They are their own person, and they have a telos. They have a direction in their life. They have a life ahead of them. And I think one of the big pieces of this model is that I really want to encourage a perspective that makes us really careful with one another, because it's a really big deal, this need and want that we have that's so right to have. It's big, and we need to be careful with each other. So the loving, the goal of being loving includes respecting the other's personhood, their emotional, spiritual, and physical space. This individual person is not the source where all my needs will be met. They are a person deserving respect and care. Eros, however, does raise the question, is this a person I could marry? But it doesn't answer it. There's other questions that answer that. or there's other ways that that question gets answered. So if it makes no sense to be together, we hear that sometimes, oh, it makes no sense that we're together, but we're just like crazy about each other, then ask, really? Well, if it makes no sense, really, to be together, then don't believe the eros, because the fact is, sense is a good thing to bring into a marriage. On the other hand, does it really not make sense? Or is it just a surprise? It could be that it's a surprise. And it might make a lot of sense. And if it makes a lot of sense, then cool. go for it. So, so eros raises the question, but it doesn't answer it. So that's pretty much my comments. I could keep going, but I have some other stuff for next week that I'll just wait on. We'll see what comes out. I keep thinking there's a hand over there, but it's an Arby's hat. So I noticed that Terry's not here to pass the mic around. Sam, you want to do it?
Happy Halloween.
Is that better? Hello? Testing? There we go. Sorry, y'all.
Oh, you know what? Actually, am I still on? I forgot to start off by introducing Scarletta. I'm sorry, but you know most of the people here, right? This is Scarletta Schaefer. She's an alumnus, an alumna. Keeping my Latin straight. She's studying Latin right now, too. She'll correct me. But anyway, welcome back to Scarletta, and she's joining us for every now and then during the series, too. Okay.
Okay, so this is sort of, I'm not sure how well formulated this question is, but I ask it coming from this particular community, which I think, I mean, we have a different, we have a different situation here than most places. I mean, with the housing especially, you have a bunch of people of marriageable age who are all living together and doing school together, but are also like in this community with certain moral standards and that has this class every other year and stuff like that. Anyway. Well, I mean,
It's been three.
Has it been?
I think, no.
I'm sure. I've been to this class at least three times. I'm on. Anyway. Anyway, all that aside. The method that you're talking about sounds really good. And like, and you have pointed out a lot of the ways where it sort of goes astray if, you know, you feed into the eros, you do all of that stuff. It's easy to get off track, but when it works really well. Which sounds really good, but it just seems, I mean, being in this community, I've seen so many relationships where, I mean, you had people who they did it that way, or at least they started out that way, where, you know, they were friends, and then they were really good friends, and then something exploded, and it was just horrible for the next several years. And I don't know to what degree that would be true if we weren't all forced to still, like, be living together in the same area and didn't have, if we had a little more room or something, but it just seems like, I don't know, is there any way to, like, it seems like when you have men and women who are friends and who are close and who are really close, even if that's in the context of, like, we're always in groups of people, we're all, you know, we're consciously talking about it when there are crushes, and not in a way of like, ooh, I have a crush on you, but like keeping that out in the open, trying not to delude ourselves, that sort of thing. It seems like when you have men and women who are close, it still just explodes. And I'm wondering, like...
Could you define
Okay. You have people who are really, really great friends, and then one of them becomes interested, and it's usually just one. And either that person, either like the person who's not interested kind of gets scared away by that, or what happens, it seems, I mean, it's, I've seen a bunch of different things happen, like, in the last few years living here especially, but it's like, it seems like it's usually, they start to get a little close to that connection, and then for one reason or another, one of them doesn't want to go that way, or they try to go that way and it doesn't work out, or something like that. And it just seems like there's at least as much, if not more, destruction to the people in those relationships because they were friends to start out with. Like, the people who were really, really good friends to start out with and then started edging, one or the other or both start edging towards that direction. And they don't just go within a week of that, hey, let's get married. You know, it's like, that's not ever what I've seen happen. It's not like people are friends and then they're like, oh, we're in love with each other, let's get married. I mean, like, that would be great, it seems like, but it's not ever what
happens. It has happened that way.
Well, okay. I haven't, yeah. But it seems like the vast majority of the time, at least,
it's not quite that instant.
Yeah, it doesn't happen, and then you just end up with these, like, not only are you breaking up with someone you were interested in, but you're like, have destroyed one of your really close friendships. And I guess I'm wondering, like, if that's what happens in this model, is it really a better model?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if this is Nancy's model or my model. Mm-hmm. I think it's Nancy's model. There shouldn't be anything to break up.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it takes so little. Like, if you were, I guess this is where my question is like, can men and women really be close friends? Like, not just like on the, like, mm-hmm. oh, we kind of know each other and we're in classes together and stuff, but like, yeah. have a close friendship yeah. when they're our age and our immaturity. And mm-hmm. I mean, I know it maybe, mm-hmm. it probably gets a little bit easier.
Well, maybe, I do have another section here that okay. I stopped before I got to. Maybe it would be helpful if I went on just a little bit to speak directly to what it looks like to be in a friendship like this. And we can go forward in that. And I also have a section on the decision to marry your friend and how that might transition. Because I don't think, I'm with Jack, I don't think there, if we're really understanding what I'm saying by friendship, there really shouldn't be something to break up. And if a man and a woman are becoming that close of friends, then it's probably... cookies. It's probably gone beyond friendship. And so one of the questions I suggest asking is this something I'd be doing if this were a friend's husband or wife? Would okay. we be doing the same stuff together? So that could be a good kind of, it's not always, it doesn't always help because there are some things that single people can do together that wouldn't be appropriate across that other line. But for the most part, that's a pretty good judge of what whether I'm being friends or whether I'm kind of crossing into an intimate sort of relationship with this person.
I guess maybe part of my question is, like, how do you get to the point of knowing them well enough that you know things like, what are you really like? What are your real values? How do you really react in, you know, difficult situations without having that extra level of closeness?
One of the things I would suggest is that in friendship, it affords the opportunity to focus outwardly on other things and not on the relationship and not on each other. And you can get to know a person quite well in their interaction with work, their tasks, other people, other relationships. You can get to know a lot about their character and their values and their commitments and so on by watching them interact with life. And so just by being alongside them and close enough to them that you can observe them in interacting with life, you can get to know them without ever becoming, between the two of you, introspective about the relationship.
There was another comment or question in back. Maybe we can come back.
This is just something really quick to what you were saying. I don't think the issue, I don't think the problem is just like, oh, you got too close. You like learned too much about this person. And so when you break up, you're really sad. Like, I think the issue is expectations and like, what are you expecting out of that person? Because then you, when you break up, what you feel like is, well, I've been betrayed, or like I've lost something, or I was supposed to have something and now I don't have it. And I think the issue, the reason it's so hurtful is because you were both expecting something of each other that didn't happen. And I think, I mean, like, I know my sister really well, but like, I'm not going to get married to her. And if she marries somebody else, like, I'm not going to get mad at her. You know what I mean? But like, I still know her really, really well. And so, I mean, yeah, she's not a guy. That's true. And so I think that's where the difficulty comes in, is because you are talking about, do I really know what my expectations are? Because I think sometimes we can be like, well, we're just friends. But really, like, that's not what you're wanting. That's not what you're hoping for. And I think that's the stickier point than how close are we. I don't know.
I kind of have two comments, and one of them is agreeing with you about when you break up, it's really expectations, because when you're dating, or if something if you know it's not working out, if something's really gone wrong, then it's expectations. You thought, oh, wow, this may be the person, and then they're not there, and you realize, oops, guess I'm misjudged everything, and you feel like the rug got pulled out from under your feet. So it's not really fun. And then the other thing is about guy and girl friendships, like close friendships. I had that with a guy where we were just really good friends. We were pretty similar in how we thought and stuff. And it turned out that there were some differences that didn't really work out for our friendship. And it's sad that that didn't work out. We had to kind of end our friendship just because there were some really big issues between us. And so you can have a really close guy-girl friendship without dating. It is possible to have, but you do want to be careful with that too, especially if it's kind of like you meet each other and overnight practically you become really close friends. I've seen that happen, and it can be misleading if it does happen. So just be careful sometimes with that.
Nancy, you mentioned that first date and maybe thinking about marrying a person isn't a good idea because I don't know them yet. But that's assuming that I don't know them yet.
Right.
So could
that's
you talk about...
That's our culture's dating model. That's what I'm
talking right.
about.
And so is there a place for some kind of dating relationship after, before marriage, but maybe once I've really gotten to know this person really well?
Well, I think that when you want to decide to transition toward marriage, I think there is definitely a transition. It doesn't happen overnight. But I think that what you want to be clear about is that, how do I say this? I promised it wasn't clean and neat, right? It's messy. It's not a formula. But I think what you want to really know is this is in the best of all possible scenarios, and we're not going to get it right. We're not going to do it well. I'm working toward finding a model that helps the most with that. But one of the decisions is that before I make any kind of promise to this person, and if it's a romantic first date because I've now decided to pursue them toward marriage, then I don't want to make a promise to them until I know I'm ready to make a promise to them. So I want to have that real settled. And I think, and one of the other things I was going to bring in is that men and women are really different. I think we've already talked a little bit about that. And so men and women, I think, have different ways of interacting in friendship, and they also have different roles in the pursuing of marriage. Feminist disclosure, former feminist disclosure. I actually think that men and women have really different roles to play in that process. And so in that regard, I think before we make promises with our actions, I just think we need to be really careful with each other and to know that I have the information I need to know that this is what I want to do. And I'm not going to take her out on this romantic date because I'm thinking about marrying her, but more like I've decided this is what I want to do. I may not be telling her that yet because that might not be loving. But I'm in. I mean, I know that might sound, I don't know.
Would you add anything to that?
This may be a little bit more radical and may reject that pan, but my rejection dating model comes back to what Scarlett was saying, is that it really is a matter of expectations. And what I would argue is if you call something a date, there's all kinds of social pressure and social realities that automatically put those expectations in place. And that's I think, what needs to be avoided. That's why I'm against dating altogether. I mean, I might suggest that you can go and do the activity that other people do when they call it a date, or that there are a lot of things you can do together that other people in our society might call a date. But the reason it's important not to call it a date is because dating is a game. It's a relational game that gets played in our culture, and we know the rules to that game. And there's a set of expectations that go with it, and there's a set of permissions that go with that, none of which I think are legitimate, valid, and healthy. And so by just rejecting the whole system, the whole institution, and rather replacing it with a whole different model of young men and young women getting to know each other, it seems to me that that's the best place.
If I agree with what you're saying about I agree with what you're saying about commitment and not wanting to give anyone a false promise of commitment. But just like my experience with reality is if I'm really not going to, if I'm going to interact with someone that I'm interested in pursuing a marriage relationship with, and not give them any kind of sense of potential commitment or anything, then ultimately the only way I can do that is to completely bar communication between the two of us, which seems more destructive than helpful. And so I'm looking for a alternate solution, I guess. But I mean, it seems to me like I could go to James tomorrow and ask him to marry me. But he's probably the only person I know that would say yes. or seven. But so I mean, it just seems like I don't know. Does that make any sense? Like how do you, I can't see how you can maintain communication in even a friendship without necessarily giving some kind of indication of, not necessarily a promise, but some kind of indication of interest, which, I mean, maybe the person's going to interpret as a promise.
Sure.
Yes. Flesh that out a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you won't be able. That's what Nancy was talking about. I mean, there's no way that it's clean and neat. It's going to be messy. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to bumble your way into the relationship. You're going to bumble your way in the relationship. I mean, there's going to be a whole lot of bumbling going on. But if you keep your own head straight about what the expectations are, that's what's critical, it seems to me. Before I got engaged to Jody, Victoria, Jody and I did not date ever. We were friends, but there got to be a point in our relationship where I thought that this was inevitable. I'm going to marry this woman. But I remember going into the coffee house where she worked, and there was a fellow employee who was sort of flirting with her. And I had a really hard time with that because, you know, in my head, she's mine. But I had to stop myself and tell myself, how is she supposed to know that? You've never made any commitments. You've never made any promises. You haven't told her that you'll give her your whole life. She's just a friend, and I really was working out of a model very much like that, is that until we have an agreement otherwise, she's just a friend. So Jack, shut up. You know, settle down. And what that did for me is make me examine my own level of willingness to commit to her, and within a few days we were engaged. You know, because I... No, but it's because I realized where I was at in the relationship by my response to that.
Okay, I haven't said anything yet because I think I'm less convinced than you guys as to exactly how this all ought to work. I probably shouldn't say anything because I'm just going to muddy the water, but. What strikes me as important, what I do agree with absolutely, with the spirit of what both of you, what all three of you have said here, is, I mean, Nancy's starting place is a great one. I mean, the issue of love, love as in concern for the welfare of the other person. Okay, that's the kind of biblical love we're talking about, being concerned for what is good for the other person. So what that says to me in that I need to avoid, on the one hand, doing things that are involving physical or emotional intimacy of the sort that is communicating a level of commitment that I am not actually making. I mean, what Jack said about sexuality being a language, that physical intimacy it has a way of saying you're the one. And I don't want to be saying you're the one to somebody that I'm not prepared to say you're the one. I mean, I shouldn't be saying that until I'm ready to say it. And I agree with that. So on the one hand, I need to watch how I behave toward that person so that I am not, 'cause I want something from them, and there's something nice about if I sort of imply that you're the one without really saying it, people respond to that, and they will snuggle up to me and say, yes, you know, I like you too, and there's something nice about being in that spot. I have no comment about that. But the thing is, I mean, we all know it from common sense. I don't know why it is. We have like a million songs on the radio that are all about how this gets messed up. I mean, we all know that it's the case, but we proceed as if somehow it's going to be different this time or something. But we just have this. I've had this picture in my mind of you know, we're taking this Band-Aid and we're rubbing it down really good and hard, you know, so it feels so good to this snug and warm, and it's protecting me, and you know, this is great. Let's get it. No, this isn't tight. We got to get this really down, and then we rip it off, and then we go write a song about how our heart's broken and all that stuff. So we all recognize. I mean, that this can go really bad. There's something There's something in us that we want to have that feeling that we're the one, and then we end up feeling really hurt because it turned out that we didn't end up being the one after all. So it's real important that I not communicate that to the other person, and it's important for me in being a loving person. I mean, I like the spirit of what's being said here, that idea that I am not putting expectations on you. I have a right to put expectations on my wife. We have made a commitment to each other, and she has expectations of me, and I have expectations of her, and those are right and appropriate because we have made a commitment to each other. But until you make that commitment, it is not appropriate for me to put those expectations on someone else or to imply through my actions so that I can get the feelings that I want to have that somehow I'm making you something that I'm not really making you. So I agree with that. That seems to me, those are the principles that I want to operate by. I can't be loving to the other person if I'm lying and ripping them off in the process. So that I agree with. But I'm sympathetic with the spirit of the questions here. When it comes to that question of, you're both pretty convinced on the friendship model, and it sounds, I like the sound of it. I understand Victoria's question, though, and the question Noah's asking. I know that every now and again it can come off that way, but it seems to me that there is this natural inclination for a man and a woman to recognize, you know, together, I am not unaware of the fact that you're a woman and I'm a man, and that this might be going someplace. So it's that exclusivity thing. I can look at relationships where it seems to me that the people entered into it with that more of the kind of the courtship sort of model, the idea that we're saying to each other, we are interested in exploring this, but we are not going to put expectations on each other. They don't put expectations on each other, and in the end, they end up either deciding to marry or not. And it seems to me like that's not so bad. I mean, as long as I'm not lying to you and I'm not putting inappropriate expectations on you, to say I don't mind anybody knowing I am interested in exploring that question with her, and she's interested in exploring it with me. Mm-hmm. That's the part where I'm not sure if there's anything so bad about that.
But. Well, I actually think that that's also fine. I would put that in the category of the friendship model, though, because the way I see nothing wrong. That's the part about it's not don't ever talk about it. For me, it's you could talk about it, but then don't put the expectations on. So I think you said it really well, actually. And that might be, Noah, like in your example, well, or maybe, I don't know if this is your example or not, but say you have an interest in someone that you're becoming friends with, and you know that you're not ready to get married. Neither of you are. Well, so you could say, you know, there's potential interest here, and I'm not anywhere near ready to say that. And so we can put that on the table and then go about our lives and be friends. And literally, I mean, but you have to be careful because now you know that there's this, you know, draw. And we want it so much, we don't want to wait for it. But I don't think there would be anything automatically. I think it could work. I think it could work well to have that out there and just know that you're also exploring other people. I mean, it's not like, again, exclusivity is part of the issue and also expectation. So I like the way Ron said that. I don't have a right to how did you say it?
I don't remember.
Was that it? That you do have that right with your spouse. But you don't have that right before that. And so even if we're in, you know, like maybe she ends up being interested in somebody else and maybe they become friends and down the road. But, you know, another part of it that comes into it for me is the sense that when you're not married, it's really okay to be not married. And I think when we're not married, it's very difficult to be not married. That was really profound, wasn't it? because it's such a drive. It's such a natural and right desire that to sit still with all of that stuff and to have to just sit on your hands and know that I see something right here, right now, that I could just run after, and everything in me would love to run after it. But it's not time. And it's really okay to wait and to work with that and to practice self-control and to not promise something that you're not ready to deliver and to just work through that. And so in that sense, if the question is not a live question yet in my life, like say, I don't think you need to be financially secure to get married, but I think you do need to be ready to take on the tasks of adulthood. And so say your parents are supporting you through college and you want to finish college before you marry someone. That's a good goal. And so say, I'm not going to really think about this until after I'm out of college. Harder to do that than to say it, I recognize. But I think that's a really good goal, is to, if I'm not ready to decide about making a decision toward marriage, then I really need to not be coupling, even in friendships. I mean, and that, I think that's partly, Victoria, where what your observations are, you're in it way more than I am in the middle of living here. But something that I feel like I've observed is that it hasn't been friendship. It's been friendship charged with expectation. And that's been devastating to people. You're absolutely right. That you'll love me and be with me forever.
Well, the expectations in a dating relationship is it'll be exclusive. You're mine. It's a kind of a quasi-marital relationship, or it can be a quasi-marital relationship. Expectations that there will be romance. Therefore, expectations that you will promote it and create it and receive it back in one way or another.
I have seen several relationships, even with people who are trying to work those things out, where someone, you know, my birthday comes along and this other person has gone out on a group picnic with a bunch of friends instead of setting the day aside to celebrate my birthday with me, which is, and you can just tell in talking to them, the sense of violation that they have is not, gee, a friend would want to celebrate my birthday with me, but I'm their special person and they weren't there on my birthday. I mean, it's that kind of expectation that, you know, my husband wouldn't do that to me. My wife wouldn't do that to me.
Okay, but that would be more or less acceptable whether it's a transitional period, where we're both strongly considering each other for marriage. Hey, it's my birthday, you didn't show up. I'd be allowed to put some expectations on end, but not upon your friends.
Well, see, that's why you can only bumble your way from making the transition from friends to married. That's the kind of thing where if that friend does do something special for me on my birthday, that says something to me about the level and nature and of their interest and their potential commitment to me. If they don't, that might tell me something else. And that may hurt like hell when they don't, if I have the expectation that it does. But it's learning to live through that hurt that's crucial. It's learning to live with the pain that here's this friend who could be more to me and who I want to be more to me, but who isn't. They're just a friend. And that may really, really, really hurt deeply. But it's some of the most painful times in my life were the pain of an unrequited love. But they were also some of the most spiritually prosperous times in my life. I learned what it meant to have God say no. I learned what it meant to trust God. I learned what it meant to be patient and wait on God, things like that. I learned what it meant to be disappointed by God's will, all of which have served me very, very well throughout the rest of my life. So I may not be getting what I want, but I'm getting what I need when I live through the pain of loving someone who's not loving me back, or thinking I love someone who's not loving me back. Well, all that can happen in the context of, I mean, the other person may not even know how much I'm suffering. They may not know what I want. They may not know what my expectations are, or what expectations I'm wrestling with, or because I haven't communicated anything more to them than you're just a good friend. Can't remember what question I was answering, but so what did you ask?
He said he was talking about there being, if you were in that transitional period,
right, okay. Right.
Wouldn't it be appropriate to have some expectations?
Right, and in that transitional period, you will sure notice, but even in that transitional period, you can't have expectations yet because there are no promises, there are no commitments, and you're going to find out some information about the nature of the relationship by how the other person reacts.
Stefan?
Yeah.
Diana?
I guess this might be more of a comment / question on what Ron was talking about. But it seems to me that throughout the history of mankind, like, the presence of love and broken hearts and disappointment and joy and things like, you know, all these aspects of love have been the source of beautiful art and music. And I mean, think about turning the radio on and like not hearing a song about, I mean, what would we write about?
You know, I think we're in heaven.
I know.
We would be writing songs about the Pythagorean theorem.
Well, see, that's just not good. I mean,
can you?
I love it and
what's
all,
wrong
but
with
I mean,
these kids like, today.
it seems to me that I don't know. I'm just wondering if there is a place for that struggle. And if there is a place for that, just those difficulties, like even the game part of it, you know, if at it's during certain periods of time of our life, if that isn't like you were saying, an instructive and a learning process to go through, that isn't necessarily something like every time I get involved with someone, I have to start asking myself this question. You know, is this going to turn out into, is this going to be a heartbreak, or is it going to be, you know, the right person? Or if there's, you know, a place for the struggle and just a place for the mystery of not knowing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with the mystery and struggle and all that kind of stuff. But maybe I didn't communicate when I was talking about what we ought to be learning from the songs. No, there's no question that, I mean, men and women are interested in each other, and we explore that in art and music and all of that. That's fine. But, like, I hear a lot of... I'm talking about that there is a moral aspect to the way that we interact with each other that seems to me that we get a clue from from the art around us that aspect is there. I hear a lot of songs these days to give an... analogous situation. I hear a lot of songs these days by younger people talking about suffering from being in broken homes and abused by their parents and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's ubiquitous. There's a ton of that stuff out there, and it's made for. There's some very artful, you know, compelling art that's come from that, but that doesn't turn around and make the behavior of their parents, I wouldn't say, well, it's just part of the mystery of life, and, you know, it's still, their parents should not have treated them that way. They should have been there for them. They should have respected them. And the suffering that's being expressed there is a suffering that's resulted from evil choices by their parents, I'd say. So what I am saying is that if I use the other person's desire for someone to make them special, if I use that as a way to get the the enjoyment out of being in that relationship without any serious intention of being committed to that person, and I end up then pulling away from it when I'm ready to move on to the next relationship, I have used them. I'm saying I have taken something from them in a way that's inappropriate. So I'm saying, I mean, we could talk about where those lines are, but what I'm saying is there is a morality about in my, as I interact with the person that I'm interested in, I think it's right. I shouldn't be making promises that I'm not making, and I shouldn't be putting expectations that I have no right to put. That's true in friendships as well. I mean, just in general, with my relationships with people, I shouldn't lie to them, and I shouldn't demand of them what is not appropriate for me to demand. So, yeah, I know there's a lot. I mean, I believe in the mystery and all of that kind of stuff. But the issue is, I think our culture has not done enough thinking about how much damage we're doing to each other, not just from the mystery of male-female relationships, but through our basic selfishness, that we've decided I have the right to get these feelings from people around me, and if it ends up really hurting them in the end, well, that's just the way the game is played, and I think that's gone too far. But.
And that was the purpose of my analogy with polygamy, that we could also, you know, support polygamy in our culture, but we've decided that that's not really the best way to do it. And that's what I'm suggesting here, that we might be used to dating and doing the serial breakup, art-producing, painful thing. But it might, and I love the moral component. That's the goal of being loving part that I'm keep bringing in.
The people who really knew how to date were in the 1950s, so go back and look at that. The girl was pretty, dumb as a stick, and boring. I mean, that's the height of the dating culture, is it's not a person. You know, that you don't want your girlfriend to be a you don't want your girlfriend to be a person. They, I mean, you just see the height of the selfishness of the whole institution and the game that gets played when it gets played out in all of its ugliness in that form.
She's an ornament. Diana?
I had a question on which you were talking about friendships earlier, when you were saying that two people can have a friendship and they can talk about it and then they can move on and do their own thing. In this community, I don't know how that would work. Because if you have one person going to one school, the other person traveling somewhere, that unwritten like understanding can work, and both of them are doing their own thing, and they can be like, well, you know, if we decide that we're interested in somebody else, that's fine. But because in the school, it just puts a lot of pressure in like an unwritten context like that. So I don't know how that would look like as a friendship for that model to work at our school. Because we're so immersed into like one little place. So even if we'd be like, well, we have nothing to say to each other anymore, but there's still like this unwritten thing that we are interested in each other, but we're just going to be friends. I don't know if you can keep it for a really long time like that here. So how would such a friendship be able to survive in a context where people are so close to each other without becoming a dating relationship, I guess.
One of the things that this intimate community has made me think about is the cultural norm that was, you know, several decades ago in small communities. People were much, they had very strict formulas for how to interact between men and women. And I think that that's not what we want to do. We don't want to say, this is the way to do it right and not be messy. But what I realized in this community is that the reason that they did that is because you would see this person day after day after day, that they were not able to deny the impact that we have on each other when we have intentionally or unintentionally led someone to rest their hope in us, or whether it's we have responded to something that they have communicated, or whether we have made it all up in our own mind. They took that really seriously. It wouldn't functionally work. And so I think that we can work with, like Victoria said, how is this better? It may be even more devastating. And that comes back to what Ron said. Well, it may be as painful when it goes wrong, in the sense of we end up not following through. But we have, the difference is we are trying to act with integrity. And it is going to be very messy unless we walk around with, like, Tegan's costume from Friday. We're going to be communicating things even before we know that we've communicated them often. But I think it is an encouragement, not just in this community. We have so much motivation to be very careful of each other, because we are committed to a big project of being together for a long time, and that we're going to mess up, and there's going to be pain, and there's going to be hurt, but it gives more of a motivation of we can't hide from the fact that it is impactful, and we don't want to impair people's ability to stay on this project. And one last thing, the honesty is not just in, am I lying? Like, because we could be filled with eros, and we're just, I'm going to tell you about it, and I'm being completely honest. But is that communication inviting someone to rest in that eros is the indication of a commitment before we have sat for an hour or 24 hours or several months with it? I think that we can't try to sanitize. We're going to hurt each other, whether it's men and women or whether in just our friendships, because we're so close and we're broken. You guys get to see ugly stuff about me, and I get to see ugly stuff about you. And as peers, you're going to be much more vulnerable to each other than even, you know, my relationship as a house manager. But just the effort, just that we're trying, and that when we do hurt someone, we don't say, you shouldn't be hurt. It's hard. I think it's really hard.
What do you do when two people decide to be committed to each other, but they can't just stay committed and not get into a relationship because it's just so close here? You know, like as Ron said about the birthday party, because you can see that person every day, it's really hard to be like, oh no, I'm still don't have time for this, because the feelings just like grow because you don't have that distance, because you're in class, you see this person. So I don't know how that friendship staying away can like actually work in like a small community like this, I guess.
I think the friendship has to do with having the resolve to not place expectations on the other person beyond what they have promised. And so now, can someone promise me something and then betray that? Yeah, I mean that, and that's a problem. But if I don't allow myself to create expectations about how they should respond to me, I don't think it matters how often I see them or how closely I can observe their life. If I don't allow those expectations arise, then I'm not expecting.
Deanna, I have a question. With what you're saying, it sounds like the scenario that you're painting is there's two people and they're friends and they like each other, and somehow this comes out in their conversation. Yeah. They're like, hey, I really think you're cool, and in like 15 years we should get married.
Yeah.
Like, and so like, okay, great. Well, now's not a good time to do that because we're both 10, but like, but I really like you, and so let's keep becoming friends, but let's not do this, but let's really like put good effort into our friendship.
And how do you do that?
And so I think the issue with that is I don't think the whole idea of being honest and talking about it and sharing what's going on, becoming real friends, means that you say, well, I have no way of actually doing this, but I really like you, so hang on a minute. And like sit there and I'll sit here and we'll go do our lives, but we'll both know the other person's waiting. And I think that's like the cruelest thing you can ever do to somebody. Like, because like, I don't think that can work. I think that's a silly idea, because you're not actually, I mean, what are you saving? Like, you're saying, here, I'll put you on layaway and I'll come back. And you can't do that with people. So I think you're right that that doesn't work, but I don't think that anyone was proposing that specifically. I don't think that, I mean, you can talk about it if, go ahead. Say
what you're saying. Guess when, once you talk about it, doesn't that, and you talk about it and you're like both saying that you like the other person, then what do? You just say, okay, we like each other, we put it on the table. Okay, now we're going to go to class.
Well, I guess I'm confused about where this whole, like, let's talk about the fact that we like each other is coming from. Like, who...
Honesty, didn't you guys say that we should be honest about and, like, lay everything on the table?
I don't know if anybody said that. If they did, I would disagree.
Yeah.
I think we need to be really, really careful. It kind of comes back to something Gabe was saying, is that if you... We should be very slow to talk about it. Because, especially in the man-woman relationship, there's all kinds of raging feelings and emotions that go on. If I, as a man, say to a woman, boy, I really, really have strong feelings toward you right now, what does that mean? Nothing, except that I right now have really, really strong feelings toward you. It doesn't mean anything, but we don't hear it as meaningless, typically, in the relationship. And so it creates a dynamic and expectations, and it's communicated something that I'm not prepared to follow through on as a man. So my suggestion to men especially is shut up until you know what you're talking about, until you've figured yourself out, until you know what you're willing to do, what you're willing to follow through on, what you're willing to commit to. I mean, even something as simple as I love you, my mentor years ago said, and I fully agree with him, is that I should never say to a woman, I love you, until my next sentence, I'm prepared to have my next sentence be, will you marry me? That just makes a lot of sense to me, because the very comment, I love you, is just fraught with all kinds of meaning, loaded with meaning that's going to create a dynamic in the relationship that I don't want to let loose unless I'm prepared to deal with it and act on it and respond to it.
So what you're suggesting is having a friendship, watching this person from a distance, not getting too emotionally attached to them, and then after a while you decide, I want to be committed to this person, they're a wonderful person. I go tell them how I feel and then hope for the best. Keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, sounds pretty silly, doesn't it? But yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I guess it's not...
You have an alternative?
No, I'm just trying to figure it out. So I guess my question would be, then this is not a friendship, this is me watching this other person. Like, how would that...
Well, I was assuming in that scenario that I am relating to them as a friend along the way as well, that I am talking to them about other things and getting to know them and getting to know their values. What are their priorities? What makes them tick? Who are they? But especially, oftentimes women get faked out by men because they hear what men say rather than watch what men do. And that, never do that. always watch what a man does. Don't listen to what he says. I mean, especially when he's talking about, you know, here's how much I love you and here's what you are to me and so on. Well, watch his actions and see if that's true. And particularly, what's crucial in getting to know the character of the man is not how he treats you, because he may be under the effects of Eros and may be particularly nice. Watch how he treats other people, because how he treats other people is how he's going to treat you when the drug is worn off.
Exactly. And I would take that conversely for women to men. It's going to sound funny, but when a believe what a woman says more than what she does. It almost seems to be the converse, because I think women can, isn't it?
It is.
Women can often say, I'm not interested, and then continue to hang out because they can't say no, or they don't feel like it's right to say no. But they're saying, I'm not interested, and they're doing, from a male perspective, they're doing, I am interested, but they're not interested. They're just not saying no.
It's like when they say, I'm fine.
Exactly. Well, that's one maybe you don't want to believe when they say. Yeah, good point. Communication is very different between men and women. So that's good.
I had a question. What's the best way to, like, develop a close relationship with opposite sex without letting them know that you just, I guess, mutually that you just want to be friends, but you do want to get to know them particularly as a person?
Well, that's what we're saying is probably not a good thing to communicate, is you just do it. You get to know people in the context of a friendship, but there's not necessarily a case for defining the relationship beyond that. We're just being friends. And we will talk more about that next week. I'm going to develop that a little bit more, and we'll continue discussing this whole topic. Should we take one or two?
I have a couple of comments, not really questions. One of the things is on the whole, like, I love you thing. And one of my really good friends told me a couple of years ago, whenever anybody, I mean, especially guys, but whenever anybody says to you, I love you, you should automatically be thinking in the back of your mind, what kind of love are you talking about? Don't just, like, automatically assume, oh, this is, you know, romantic, or it's this or that. I mean, they might be talking about something totally different. So I wouldn't say, don't ever say I love you, because I think that there's times when it's helpful for friends to tell each other that. But it has to be with understanding. And one of the other things that I wanted to comment on is, like, with the whole close friendship community sort of thing, is I don't think that we should, like, assume that automatically once people get married that, I mean, I can't speak from experience, but it's not like you're all of a sudden going to close the door on emotions for anybody else. I mean, I think that we automatically assume that, oh, I'm married to this person, I'm never going to, like, be attracted to anybody else in my life. You know, I'm always going to, like, have this Eros. It's kind of like that typical assumption that I'm always going to be, like, in love with this one person forever. And that may not happen. And it likely won't happen. So, like, the problems that we're dealing with now, you're going to keep dealing with them. And you can't run away from them, even if you're married. Like, there's just, like, it's not like it's going to be some perfect solution or answer. And I think more than anything, it's going to be hard and it's going to hurt. And that's life. And, like, relationships are some of the hardest things in the world. I mean, I can speak from experience in saying they're the things that have hurt me very, very deeply. And not just, I mean, on the level of family relationships, on the level of all kinds of levels. And so I think keeping the other person's best interest in mind and loving them that way, I mean, there's never going to be, like, some perfect system or answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Very well said. Okay, we'll take one more and we'll write them down for next week. We'll come back to it.
I guess I have a question about what you were saying about expectations and having expectations of someone or that aren't valid and outside of a friendship or greater expectations. I wasn't exactly sure what you meant by that, because I think we all probably have different ideas of what friendship is and how far that goes and what it means to be a friend and what do you say to a friend. And I know from my own experience that my friends have been, after getting to know them and finding out who they really are, you really find out how screwed up they are. And so, and you realize your own screwed upness. It's hard to distinguish. Well, I have these feelings, but I just want to be friends. And like, you decide that. So then, I think that's really difficult to work out. And I like what you said about caring for the other person and all that. I still think that being a friend to someone is, for at least for myself, that's the hard thing for me to figure out is, mm-hmm, where does that stop and begin?
Well, it's a good point, a good question on a lot of levels. Like, we could do a whole different series on what is friendship and what does good friendship look like and how do we care about each other. And that's an important issue. And then you're also saying where there's this, where does it blend into I'm creating expectations. That is something I'm going to talk about a little bit more next week, particularly in how we interact with opposite sex friendships. Homework assignment for tonight is to go watch When Harry Met Sally. No, I'm just kidding. I do want to clarify, though, Deanna, I think it might have been me that sounded like I was saying you could just say something and wait 4 years and get married later. I think that could work if you're not living in the same house together. I absolutely agree with you. I had more in mind, somebody's away at college or, that sort of thing. And even then, it wouldn't be, I agree with Scarletta, it's not like you're putting someone on layaway. It's, you're trying to figure out what does it look like to care about one another as friends, and what does it look like to be in a friendship that's not yet promised, not exclusive, with all those different parts going on. So,
kind of. In this whole discussion, I think that the biggest issue is exactly like what you're bringing up, because there are so many distinctions of like, well, yeah, that makes sense, but what does that even look like? And I think that the easiest thing to do when talking about like dating relationships, or should we be courting, or should we just be friends and then like decide we want to get married, like the easiest thing to do is just be like, well, here's the right way to do it. And then you're not thinking about it anymore. You're disengaged from the process and you're just like, well, I'm just friends, so I'm fine. And I think I've seen people who've dated and done their relationships really well and have really cared about each other because they didn't go through 25 different people that they actually acted like they were married with. They were actually very caring to the people in their lives. And they called it dating, and they were exclusive, and I would have done things differently. I don't know if I would do it the same way as everyone else would say. I'm not sure. But I've also seen courtships that have worked really well. I've seen the doing friends thing that has just been like a cover for being like accepted by other people who think it's the right thing to do. And so I think that the biggest issue is not what is the right model for getting married, but the issue is like, how do I think about other people, and how come it's so easy to treat the person that I'm thinking about getting married as something less than a human being? And I think that, like, that's the real issue. Like, why do I make this relationship so much different? And why don't I treat them the same way I treat other people? And, like, how much can that tell me about my real motivations and who I really am and the, like, what I'm really valuing about that person? And so I think that's the most important question in any of it. And you're going to be having to interact with that question all the time. And I think one of the virtues of not just giving yourself, this is my model, I'm going to date someone and get married, I'm going to court someone and get married, I'm going to, like, marry my best friend someday, like, but really just settling on, I want to be this kind of person. This is how I want to care about other people and should care about other people. And then seeing, well, what does that mean for how I treat somebody that I would think about getting married to? Like, I think that's exactly the issue.
Yeah, amen. And amen. It's about not what is it that person can give me in the relationship, but the question always needs to be, what's the kind, loving, serving thing to do for them? What's going to promote their well-being? It's not about me, it's about them.
That doesn't come naturally to us as humans.
And that's why all the models can go wrong, is because we're just so cotton-pick and selfish that we want something out of the relationship.
Okay, we better stop. We've gone over.
We started late.